Today on the show, why we've all been wrong about Troy and Tyrene Calypso.
Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of some of our favorite video games. My name's Caleb.
And my name's Connor.
And today we've got a little bit of a hot take as far as Borderlands is concerned.
We are addressing the controversy today.
The big controversy, the big question that is on everyone's minds, and that is... why are Troy and Tyrene Calypso as amazing as they are?
That's right. Today we're taking on the haters, as it were. All the children of the vault haters out there who aren't down with the twin gods, as it were. We're here to set you straight.
This is one of the big debates going on because ever since this game came out, they've been one of the more kind of controversial aspects of this game. Just a lot of people talking about them as being one of the worst aspects of the game, very maligned, very like that. And a lot of that is a comparison to a Handsome Jack. Less necessarily that they're bad in and of their own right, and more like they don't necessarily compare to Handsome Jack.
Handsome Jack definitely set a really high bar for villains in the Borderlands games. So it's natural that after him, the Calypsos kind of maybe don't measure up to a lot of people in their minds, as to what a villain should be.
Exactly. And I think, though, it's actually really interesting to me, because today we're going to be talking about why I disagree with all of that, and I think the Calypso twins are actually spectacular villains, and easily on par with Handsome Jack.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting topic, especially for me, because I know where you're coming from, Caleb. I know that you are very much a Calypso twins apologist. You've kind of convinced me, actually, and we'll get into that later, but I can sort of see where the haters are coming from. So if you're kind of going into this thinking, oh, they're both gonna just come at me with all these theories about why I'm wrong, like, trust me, let me just tell you right off the bat, I feel you. if you hated the Calypso twins, I know what you're saying, but just stay with us.
So following up from our last episode, we had a kind of deep dive discussion into the life of Typhon de Leon. And quick, just an FYI for those that care, the game came out in September, so I'm assuming anyone who cares to play it has already played it and finished it at this point. This episode is going to have fairly massive spoilers about the late game of Borderlands 3. So just be aware of that. But we were having kind of a deep dive discussion last week into Typhon de Leon and his life, and ultimately his family, because that's the surprise twist at the end of Borderlands 3, is that the Calypso twins are the children of the first Vault Hunter, Typhon de Leon, and in a way kind of following up from his life and legacy in a lot of kind of important, significant ways. And so I think the people who kind of see the twins as primarily being a parody or commentary on Twitch and YouTube streamers as a, like, religious culture slash cult, I don't necessarily know that that's a bad take, but I think that's kind of an incomplete take on who they are as characters and what their significance is in the universe.
I would have to agree. Typhon de Leon's life story really informs a lot about the Calypso twins and their story. And yeah, it's natural, it's understandable to look at them and think, oh, this is just Gearbox kind of doing a parody of modern YouTubers and, you know, modern day entertainers whose only concern is the clout chasing and the fame and developing a following and, you know, smash that like button. That's what the Calypso twins seem to be all about. And yeah, that was kind of my perspective at first too. But like you said, Caleb, there's a lot more to it than that. So it's not necessarily wrong take. It's not, you know, you're not wrong about that if you see them that way, but there's more context that you might be missing.
And so parenthetically, by the way, if you haven't yet, you should make sure to follow Lore @Lore_Party on Twitter And make sure you give us a rating on Apple Podcasts.
That's right. Smash that rate button. we're not above it ourselves. It's whatever.
Download us on Spotify.
Yes. Do all of that.
Do all of that. And so just want to make sure we do get that in there.
Get that out of the way. But as we kind of left off with the previous episode, which, of course, if you haven't listened to it, go do that. We highly recommend it. But in the last episode, we explored how Typhon de Leon's journey as the first Vault Hunter more or less culminated, or at least reached its zenith, when he and his wife discovered the Iridian homeworld, Necro Tefeo. And he kind of saw that as his ultimate prize. That's what he had been searching for his entire life. And, you know, we get into this in the last episode. But unfortunately, the legacy he leaves, his children, didn't quite share his vision of what Necro Tefeo meant.
And that's what's really interesting. And I think Typhon actually says it himself, kind of what the twins' thoughts on it were.
After their mother died, so scared I'd lose them too. So I kept them here. I thought they'd be happy. But they kept staring up at that sky, full of stars they'd never reach. To me, this planet was enough. The reward at the end of my hunt. To them, it was just a cage.
Yeah, Typhon mentions it as well. He kind of feels a little guilty for setting them up in this way. I think he, you know, from his perspective, we've mentioned how Necro Tefeo was his prize. They only saw it as a cage. And from his perspective, the stars were like, you know, objects to be admired. But to them, they just kind of got resentful of the stars because they would never reach them. Typhon mentions how after his wife Leda passes away, he was terrified of losing his children as well. And so he sort of maybe went a little overboard with keeping them safe, keeping them hidden. And that kind of backfired on him when the kids developed into these resentful, bitter creatures who just needed glorification. They felt the kind of a pathological need to be unique. And that's what led them to create the Children of the Vault and set out on their journey.
And I think that really is where it comes down to it. Typhon kind of had been to the stars. He had had his adventures, and his ultimate theme of all of it is that none of it was worth it. None of it is what he wanted. So the Necro Tefeo was kind of the ultimate prize for him because it was the things he had been looking for, but not in the way he had spent most of his life looking for it. Whereas his kids heard the story and they saw the stars. And when Typhon saw them and thought the ultimate goal of all this was that none of it mattered, or their ultimate takeaway from it was, this is something we deserve and not something we could ever have if we stay here.
It's almost like Typhon didn't want to matter. He wanted to find what mattered to him. But the Calypsos, they wanted to matter. They sought all of the attention and status in life that their father avoided. And that, I think that gets us into a really big theme for us on this discussion, where we want to get into how the Calypsos are effective characters, but also effective villains, because they're an inverse of kind of what came before them. And the example that their father set, you know, we've talked about how Typhon got through life based on his charisma. He was a very gifted storyteller. That's how he found his early successes in life. And the Calypsos sort of are a direct contrast of that, but they share that charisma that he had. They're also obviously very charismatic people. They're entertaining. They have a gravitas about them that people are attracted to. So it's like the same skill that their father had, but they use it for very nefarious ends. He avoided the spotlight. They actively sought it out. He refused to trust corporations, and he wanted to, you know, prevent loss of life, whereas they would backstab and make, you know, double deals with Malawan or whoever else, Aurelia Hammerlock, anyone they needed to, and showed utter disregard for people's lives. It's a complete inverse of everything Typhon stood for.
Exactly. And so it was just kind of what that all led to. And it really does kind of go back to And even dialing back just a little bit to how they even perceived the stars, like, Tyreen always talks about how she's going to be the only star in the sky, and at one point when Typhon is actually struggling with her, trying to prevent her from literally, like, doing things that'll kill untold numbers of people, the first thing he says is,
"Hiya, Starlight!
Let me go!
Ah! I let you go once, and see how that turned out?
You scared old man! This is your fault! You kept us here when the universe should have been ours!
I gave you what I could.
I don't care! I'm gonna take what's mine!"
It's clear that, you know, the connections that Typhon had with Troy and Tyreen and how he brings them back with the stars thing and calling her Starlight, it's very much a sore spot for her, and it shows how much resentment she has for Typhon for keeping her and Troy kind of isolated on Necrotheo their entire lives. I think at some point she calls him a scared old man and says, "This is all your fault." It's very much a classic kind of a narcissism to just make yourself the hero in your own story. And it's a little bit like a callback to how Handsome Jack operated. He never took responsibility for things. He was always the hero in his mind. And so maybe that's a Borderlands through line. Maybe that's something that Borderlands villains tend to have in common. But the Calypsos definitely had that going for them as well.
And I think that just in general, that response of it all kind of shows in everything they do earlier in the game, because we have already talked about how they use exactly the same skill set as their father, but in the opposite way. But just it works on so many levels, because if you also consider the Crimson Raiders are in a lot of ways kind of an indirect follow-up to Typhon de Leon's legacy. The Crimson Raiders are a group of individuals who work together to bring each other up, whereas the Calypso twins, again, are the inverse. They bring a large group of people together to lift two people up.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this in every level.
Right.
They work with Malawan, even though, and possibly even because, their father was so specifically anti-corporate. They have this personal vendetta against Vault Hunters, because Vault Hunters represent everything that makes them angry about their father.
Typhon de Leon being the first Vault Hunter was definitely a progenitor of a greater phenomenon. Everyone who came after him, who sort of followed his model of traversing the stars and seeking out ancient treasures and fighting monsters and just being the, you know, the big heroes of the Borderlands, they all, you know, owe something to Typhon. He walked so they could run. So in a way, every Vault Hunter that came after Typhon de Leon is like a child of his. They kind of follow in his footsteps. And like you said, Caleb, they represent the idea of, you know, working together for a goal, you know, and bettering yourself by helping others. And that to the Calypsos, that's just nonsense. Like, that they represent the inverse. Like you said, they're all about just lifting themselves up and nothing else. And so I think, the hatred and scorn they show for the heroes of Borderlands 3 and the Crimson Raiders is very much an extension of the hostile feelings they have toward their father for what he represents. Again, we come back, like you said, Caleb, it's in every level. We come back to this theme of the Calypsos are the inverse of what their father represents and even what the entire fiction of Borderlands represents in a lot of ways.
And I think right there is where we run a little bit into kind of their comparison to Handsome Jack. Handsome Jack was as perfect of a villain for Borderlands 2 as he was, because he was the exact inverse of everything the Borderlands universe had been built as up until that point. So while Pandora as a planet in a lot of ways represented consistent chaos, Handsome Jack and Hyperion very much represented a chaotic consistency, is I think the slightly roundabout but most descriptive way to put it. And I think that's a big part of the reason why Jack was as perfect as a villain as he was. He was the exact inverse of what Pandora was, and so he just felt so fitting into the world. And I think that applies to the Calypsos too, but the things that make that apply to the Calypsos, which is to say their connection to Typhon and therefore their decisions that led to them being the inverse of everything Vault Hunters are doesn't come into play until later in the game when Typhon is introduced as a character and when their connection to Typhon is discovered. And so as a result, even though they serve a lot of the same function as Handsome Jack, where they are this direct inverse of vault hunting culture, but it isn't immediately obvious. And I do think that that is something that could have been changed about the scripting of the game, that maybe could have improved player perception of that if liking the Calypso twins meant that you didn't have to play like 10 hours into the story.
Right. Yeah, Jack made an impression right away. He kind of came into the game swinging it from this perspective of, I'm not what you expected, and I'm here to, you know, change everything. I represent everything that the world of this game is not. And I think the Calypso twins sort of just came in as annoying streamers. You don't really come to appreciate that they are also an inverse of the game world until later. So that's a fair point. But one last thing I found interesting about how Typhon's legacy relates to the twins. There's a trope in fiction that I've seen before where a parent, you know, some parent character has kids who turn evil or become villains or whatever. And they have this, they always have this arc where they want to get through to the kids and reach them. And what's interesting about Typhon is he doesn't really seem to have that delusion or that impression that he can, you know, make the kids good again.
What is it? Hammerlock actually straight up follows that trope earlier in the game.
That's right. He asks you not to kill his sister Aurelia if you can help it. He kind of like falls into that a little bit, and that's understandable. He's a human being. He doesn't want to sever a blood tie if he doesn't have to. But what was really interesting about Typhon is, you know, when you early on after you meet him, he knows that you have just recently defeated Troy, his son, and Troy's now dead. And you think it's going to be awkward between your Vault Hunter character and Typhon, your first Vault Hunter, but he's, you know, pretty understanding about it. He says something along the lines of, I'm not glad Troy is dead, but he did become a monster, and Vault Hunters kill monsters. And I think that one line says a lot, just Vault Hunters kill monsters. He really plays into what a Vault Hunter is and how his own children have become the opposite of Vault Hunters, and how that really ties into their place in the story and in the game.
And the last thing that I think like really makes it interesting is with the COV logo, because even the COV logo is the Vault Hunters logo upside down.
Which I actually never noticed until literally just the other day when you told me about that.
I'm really surprised you didn't notice that. I actually noticed that really fast.
I was not paying attention to that at all. I just thought, oh, it's the letters COV for Children of the Vault. But no, that's the Vault logo from the original Borderlands, just upside down. I never saw that.
It's not just the original Borderlands. That's the Vault logo you get from like just Vault Hunters in the whole series. And that's, right. They're the opposite of that.
There's a lot of details that if you're not looking and all you hear are, you know, what's up, Vault Thief? If that's all you ever hear and that's all you pay attention to, you'll miss out on stuff like that.
Exactly. And I think that's why I think the streaming like served as a little bit of a kind of unnecessary red herring, I think, as far as what their theme and story was.
Perhaps.
So I guess yes, they come off as a little bit annoying, but that's why they're amazing. They taunt you because you are everything they hate about their past. They're a thematic inverse to this entire world, just like Jack was. So just in retrospect, they end up being just this really interesting and really nuanced follow-up to that theme and a really profound story of the complexities of personal legacy and the way that family kind of ingrains itself into your identity. Because that's the other major theme of Borderlands 3. Every planet you come in on, you run into characters who are struggling with different definitions and concepts of their family and their identity. And I think ultimately the twins end up being the culmination of that. They are the ultimate exploration of that family and identity in the Borderlands universe. But I think the fact that that story arc doesn't really unfold until the final act of the game, I think does them as characters a little bit of a disservice.
So what's interesting about this for me is kind of the personal journey that I've been on myself about this. I've kind of had a couple different positions on the Calypso twins as villains, as characters. And, you know, like I alluded to earlier, when I first started playing through Borderlands 3, I did kind of immediately feel annoyed by them as characters and as villains. And I just thought, God, I can't wait to kill these two little shits. And that's kind of what carried me through most of the game. And so, you know, people who did kind of, have a bone to pick with them as the villains of the story, I understand where they're coming from. It definitely can be grating. And I think Caleb, you mentioned how the streamer angle and the modern day YouTube entertainer type aspect of them might have been a red herring. It's a bit of a smokescreen, and maybe it distracts from what's interesting and what's actually impactful about them as characters. But I would say it does kind of tie into what we discussed earlier about their need for attention, their need to feel special. And this is kind of the streamer persona is kind of a topical way to get that across. But that, you know, setting that aside, I did eventually, you know, learn more about Typhon's story and the background behind how the twins were raised on Necrodefeo. And personally, I really came to appreciate them as characters who had a fully realized arc and motivations for what they were doing that were, you know, as wacky and off the wall and comic booky as what they were doing was. You know, the motivations were pretty understandable on some level. So I've definitely come to, you know, appreciate them more. And I would argue that the haters might be missing something, but I also kind of know where they're coming from. But, you know, I think we can all learn from the great Typhon de Leon, and, you know, just try to remember that if you keep your eyes open, you never know what you might stumble into. It could be a, you know, really interesting story behind some villains you initially hated.
Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. Be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party so that you can catch my next episode where I explain to you why Ava is the childhood icon that we've always deserved.
Please, no.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Be sure to like, follow, and obey.